All right, good morning, everybody. Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I think the biggest challenge is trying to squeeze everything that there is to know about gender fluidity and gender identity development into a 15-minute spot. So I might be talking fast. We'll do what we can. All right, so I'm going to start with some foundational work, and then we'll go into kind of some of the basics. Unfortunately, that's probably all that we'll have time for. But the field of transgender health is something that has been exploding for a long time, but particularly over these last 5 years. There has been a lot of growth, and in many ways, the youth in our society are driving this, and the language is always changing. So I think it helps to just have a little bit of a foundational understanding so we're all on the same page before we move forward. So, when we think about gender, I think most of us in the field who are doing this work think of it as a multi-component process, or at least concept. And there's three different pieces. So the first being birth sex. And I show pictures here, and when I'm giving talks to parents, to teachers, often even to children, I show this big picture here, except on a giant screen. I narrowed it for this group, but it's generally like the first thing you see. It tends to wake you up because I meet with a lot of parent groups at like 7 p.m. and everybody needs a little bit of a wake up. But what are we looking at here? Right? If we were to look at this picture, right, what are we seeing and why do I show this? I show this because you go through life, you look at the options that you have when you're given a question around sex or gender. Right, and you're given two options, male or female. You have these two boxes you have to choose from. The reality is that this is something that we are indoctrinated into from the very first moment of life. Right? Is this a boy or is it a girl? Right? It's the first thing you hear when the child is born. And yet, at much higher rates than people really understand, we are seeing lots of intersex conditions or differences between male and female in terms of sexual development. So even when we look at birth sex, which I think is the easiest thing to put into two different categories, there's actually much more diversity. So when we focus on the genitalia and you move out and up into the brain, which is much, much more complex, obviously there's going to be a spectrum of expression. Right? So birth sex is one component of gender. Right? It's not something we always ask about. The next one is gender role. Gender role being kind of the public presentation of gender. We've learned a lot about gender role over the years. This picture here, I won't go into the story, but is the John Joan case, which I would encourage you guys to read about. One notable piece as we're talking about social justice issues is that the medical field and the mental health fields have a lot to apologize for in our work with transgender and gender variant folks. And the John Joan case is one of those that really, really highlights it. Gender identity is probably the easiest concept to understand because it's individual, right? I get to decide my own gender identity. This is how I consolidate my birth sex, my gender role, my preferences. This is how I feel internally, right? So we think about gender role being the public presentation, gender identity being within the brain, and birth sex being something that is out of one's control. Right, so what is different between gender and sex? So again, sexuality, we think of multi-component. I'm talking to a room of STI researchers and clinicians and activists. This is probably not news to you guys, that there's a difference between sexual orientation, sexual behavior, and sexual identity. But this takes on a new meaning when we're talking about gender variant youth, because the concepts of gender are so fluid in a lot of ways that when we ask, who are you attracted to? You get a much more complex and nuanced response when you're talking to a lot of gender variant youth than you would others. All right. This work is really, really fun. So I feel incredibly privileged to be able to be a psychiatrist working with this population. Every story is completely different, and there's so many possible outcomes. And so when we look, how do we consolidate and kind of wrap this together in this pastiche, this fabric? You can be born male, you can be born female, you can be born intersex, you can identify as any of the above, and you can be attracted to any of the above. And there's like these million different possibilities, and they're constantly changing. And that makes work like STI research and prevention a little bit more complex, because you can't just ask one question and really get to this layer of complexity. Right? So who you are in terms of gender and who you are in terms of sexuality are two distinct things, But as we're going to look into, they do overlap with one another. All right, so interactive piece of the presentation. I really do want to see hands. This gets people engaged. It's pedagogical research, right? All right, so we're going to talk about the developmental timeline. When does this happen? So we're going to talk about three different steps. So one is gender identity development, one is sexual orientation, and the other is sexual behavior. So if we're looking across the lifespan, which comes first? And I need everybody to raise their hand to give an answer. So who says gender identity comes first? Ooh, that's a lot. All right, perfect. I like the high hands. All right, sexual orientation. Okay, a few more. And sexual behavior. All right, so there was a clear winner in gender identity. And I used to always hate it when my teachers would ask a question and then the answer would be like, well, everybody's right, there's no right answer. This is not one of those cases. There is a right answer. And the right answer is sexual behavior. So sexual behavior happens far and away earlier than anything else. There's actually ultrasonographic evidence of masturbation happening in utero. Right? This is something that at 20 weeks of gestational age, all of the parts, all of the nerves, all of the functioning is present. Right? We often put our adult ideas of sexuality onto children, but sexual behavior is highly, highly common. Masturbation in childhood tends to peak around age 5, go into quiescence or latency, and then start to come back around adolescence and puberty. Right? It's important because it's how children explore their bodies, but it's the first to come up. The second is gender identity. And gender identity is a really interesting developmental process. So there's a three-stage process to this, the first being basic gender identity, which happens around age 2. So at age 2 to 3, kids are able to say, I am a boy or I'm a girl, but it's not something that is stable over time. So you can have a child at age 2 says, I'm a boy, but when I grow up, I'm going to be a mom. And that's not in a abstract, I like mom's qualities. It's in a very literal, I'm going to develop breasts, my penis will fall off, and I will become a mother. It's not something that is stable over time. You start to see some kids at this age who ultimately have a transgender identity who do espouse their affirmed gender as opposed to their birth sex. So kids who are assigned male at birth will sometimes, as early as age 2 or 3, very clearly articulate, I am a girl. Gender stability happens next. And how you differentiate between gender stability and constancy, you can do with the theory of mind test. And so it's really fun. If you have kids or you know anybody who's around that 4 to 5 age range, you can do this at home. You just take a doll. Let's say it's a girl doll. How do we know it's a girl doll? You can ask the child. Well, she has a dress. She has a purse. She has long hair. You know, whatever it is. Let's even say it's short hair, but she's wearing a dress and has a skirt. You take that exact same doll, change the clothes into male clothes, and you ask the kid, all right, is this a boy or a girl doll? When you change the clothes, you change the hair, you change the presentation, the gender goes along with it. Kids believe that gender is something that is fluid, that it's the outside presentation that defines gender rather than this internal sense of self. And it's not until kids reach gender constancy that they understand that that is something that's stable over time. So when they reach gender stability, they understand that the gender changes for the doll, but not for them. Right? So you ask that little boy that you're asking about the doll, so is this a boy or girl doll now? Well, it's a boy. Well, if we put you in a dress, would you be a boy or girl? Well, I would still be a boy. I would just be wearing a dress. And so it's when you get to gender constancy around age 6 that this is something that kids really, really internalize and understand. It's not surprising that at that age, this is when we start to see some of the natural segregation of gender. And this is where I tend to see kids start to show up in my clinic. Because that diversity of expression of gender play is tolerated before they understand this is something that's probably not going to change. And so we do start to see distress enter in around this time. Right? This is where boys and girls start to get cooties. All right, sexual orientation, complex. Right? After all these years, we still don't really understand it so much. For most people, it tends to consolidate around adrenarche, so around the few years prior to the visible stages of puberty. For some, it can be very early. For some, it can be very late. Obviously, this is something that's fluid over time. And if we start to think about transgender identity development, which is down at the bottom, there's no right answer. Ooh, 5 minutes already. So every stage in this process, you can have a realization of one's identity in terms of a trans identity. There's no right answer. What we see in the dominant narrative of the media right now is that early childhood onset. That doesn't happen most of the time, but it's the story that is out there. One of the challenges in this work is that we create diagnostic criteria in order to allow people to access care. That creates a tautology in a lot of ways, where people come in and they tell you the story that they think you want to hear. And in some ways, it shapes the direction of these individuals. But what we know is when we actually talk to all these kids, that there's an increasingly diverse amount of experiences and fluidity in how they understand and experience their gender. So let me just run through these last few. Where does this come from? Short answer, we don't know. We've learned a lot from DSD, from the disorders of sex development or the differences of sex development. We know that androgen exposure in utero does tend to masculinize play in childhood, but doesn't necessarily influence gender identity. The imaging work in terms of brain imaging and structures is very, very early, so there's not a lot we can say about that. The most interesting study is this cognitive study that Olson did just last year, where essentially the bottom line of the study is that transgender kids know who they are, right? That their own self-report of their gender identity is as accurate as any assessment that we can do, which makes our job a little bit easier. One big question is, how prevalent is this? You would think this would be an easy answer. We have terrible data. We have zero data in kids. The best data we have comes out of Europe. To summarize this slide, what I would say is that the rates are going up, right? If you look at the DSM, the current rates quoted are 0.0014%. Obviously, we know that those are grossly underestimated in terms of the rates of trans people in the world, but it's likely going to be around somewhere between 1-3% of folks who are identifying as some gender other than kind of cisgender, right? One's congruence with their natal sex. So it's very high. So I think to contextualize it, the data that we have from the Williams Institute most recently shows that there's probably about the same number of folks who are trans who are redhead. Right? It's about equal. Type 1 diabetes, same number as people who are trans in the U.S. And you just imagine how much training and education you get around diabetes in medical school and how little you get on transgender healthcare. It's just kind of a stark contrast. So this is kind of the current thinking when we're talking about gender development in youth, but it's a little bit problematic. A lot of the research that we have is that children who are gender dysphoric in childhood, a majority of them, by the time they pass through adolescence, no longer identify in that way. This individual slide could be a 45-minute presentation. What I will say about it is that there's a lot of problems in the current research for transgender youth in particular. And for these studies that demonstrated there was a high desistance rate, a lot of kids were lost to follow-up. So what does this say to us? It says to us that there's this interesting overlap, that some kids who grow up to be gay or lesbian demonstrate cross-gender behaviors or identities in childhood, and not all of them go on to be transgender as adults. So what I would posit is kind of a new proposal. So in this slide, the yellow is representing gender variance, right? So any kind of gender variance. Gender variance is a non-specific entity. It's something that we see in childhood, it's something we see in adolescence, and it's something we see in adulthood. A portion of folks who are gender variant in childhood are transgender, right? And they persist in being transgender in adulthood. And there's a percentage of folks who have gender variance who are not transgender and will not identify as transgender in adulthood. And the third category is that there are folks who are transgender in adulthood who didn't demonstrate any kind of gender variance in childhood. Right? So what does this mean, and what does this mean about our youth in particular, and what is the implications? Well, the implications are that There are so many stories in this work, and it's really hard to condense into 15 minutes because I know my time is up. So I will leave with these slots, which are A, that there are increased rates of psychiatric comorbidity among trans folks. This is very clearly fitting within the minority stress model, and certainly is not at increased rates compared to other psychiatric comorbidities. And my final thoughts, referral rates are skyrocketing. How do we understand the needs of these youth? And how do we start to learn how to train ourselves and train other clinicians to be more competent in their care? So I will hopefully get some questions. Thank you for your time. I'm glad I only went over a minute. That's pretty good. Thank you.